live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor, 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Coming up 40 minutes from now, we will debut the college football fix for the 2023 college football season. Sonny Dykes will join us, the head football coach at TCU. Lakers reporter Trevor Lane going to swing on by at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific. And former NBA player, won two championships with the Miami Heat, Joel Anthony, will stop by at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. LeBron may or may not be retiring. Denver is also off to the NBA Finals after seeing a little sweep go down last night in Los Angeles, where they sweep the Lakers out of the postseason. We'll also see tonight if the Miami Heat can do the same, as they're up 3-0 trying to close things out on their home court in Game 4 up against a pathetic, and I mean a really pathetic and weak and lethargic Boston Celtics team. But first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
Hot Take Hickey.
I'm actually really livid at Hot Take Hickey today. And this probably may be the most mad I've ever been at a good friend of mine in Hot Take Hickey. Now, Hot Take Hickey bust his ass for this show. We have a fun back and forth, but the Hickey Hex is a real thing. And I've never met someone that is more of a mush than Hot Take Hickey. And about a week ago, when we were getting ready for Lakers and Nuggets, I told Hot Take Hickey on the air, I'm actually going to be out of town next week because I'm going to Game 5 with my brother-in-law in Denver. They live out in Centennial, Colorado, about 20, 25 minutes from the stadium. Going to go visit my sister, my brother-in-law, and my niece. And we're going to make a little sports trip out of it. So I was really looking forward to that trip. I'm still going because I'm going to be a good uncle here. But I really wanted to go to Game 5. And Hot Take Hickey guaranteed me, when I was looking for him to say, oh, I guarantee you there's going to be a sweep, so the opposite would happen, he guaranteed me that there would be a Game 5. And folks, as we sit here today, you know it and I know it, there is no Game 5 because the Denver Nuggets swept the Lakers out of the postseason. So, Hickey, let's have a little audio right out of the gate and revisit that memory and look back at another unfortunate Hickey Hex.
It's the Hickey Hex.
I really do not think this will be a sweep.
Oh, boy. The TikTok music is playing. Oh, no.
We're flirting with, I guess, a little danger here based on
no.
A small sample size of track records previously, but I think you should be good for Game 5.
Man, no. We know what's going to happen.
You will be good for Game 5.
LeBron's going to get hurt in Game 1. Anthony Davis going to get hurt as well. Darvin Ham's going to get suspended, and then there will be a Nuggets sweep. That's exactly what's going to happen after Hickey tells me I'm going to be good for Game 5.
I truly do not think this will be a sweep.
And the Denver Nuggets, for the first time in franchise history, will go to the NBA Finals.
Oh, my God. They swept the Lakers.
Wow.
Hot Take Hickey strikes again.
Anything you have to say for yourself? Because I am fuming right now. I am about as red as a tomato, and I am just ready to erupt. I am so mad at you right now.
What do I have to say for myself? I guess nothing. I mean, shame on Anthony Davis for not showing up yesterday.
Oh, take some accountability.
Like, I take no responsibility for the sweep.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
You're a terrible friend. I'm sorry.
Terrible friend.
I thought
you were in. The Lakers undefeated at home. You can't win one game at Crypto.com Arena.
You say things, and then the unthinkable happens. It was unthinkable before this series, even though I was pro-Denver, and I guaranteed that Denver was going to win this series. It was inconceivable that this would be a sweep. And then out of nowhere, Denver's off to their first NBA Finals. They do it in dominant fashion in four games. Anthony Davis didn't show up in the first half of the game last night. LeBron runs out of gas. Those are all things that shouldn't have happened, but they happen because of you. Because you say things and then bad things happen to people. I can't believe this. I'm actually shocked. I really thought you were going to come on in today and say, hey, this one's on me. I was in the wrong. I guaranteed a sweep, or I guaranteed that there would be a game five, and now it's a sweep. This is the most obvious apology of your life. All you got to say is, I'm sorry. That's it. But you can't even do that. And I really do believe that you put the intentional jinx on me. That you went out there and you intentionally mushed it. You said, I guaranteed a game five, because you didn't want to see me happy going to game five, and you knew a sweep was coming. You have a lot of power.
Wow.
You got to be careful with your words.
I love the fact that you think I have this.
You do!
This power over sports, where I may be the most powerful man in the sports universe then. More than Roger Goodell, more than Adam Silver, where I am just right now just in control of the NBA playoffs. Should really be betting a lot of money on this.
Well, that's what I'm going to start doing. I'm going to start asking you who you like in the games on the point spread, and I'm just going to take the opposite, and I'll be able to quit my job in about 5 months because I'll be so filthy rich. It'll be ridiculous. Your track record, it is crazy. You're kind of like the 18-0 Patriots, where you win all those games, and then occasionally, all right, one, we'll go the other way, like that Giants Super Bowl. But that's what you are. It is really unbelievable, this 2.5, 3-year run that we've had together, how many times you have jinxed the team. But this one, it just takes the cake. It really does. It puts the crown on your head as the mush and just as the leader of the Hickey Hex, because this one was personal because I had the tickets on my phone. Section 112. They got to refund me now. And I'm going out to Denver to do two lousy shows in Denver. And I'm not even going to see a game. This is bad. This is really friendship altering, defining in our relationship, where you really put the intentional mush on me. I feel terrible.
Well, is it too late to transfer that to game one of the NBA Finals
next
Thursday?
No, that's not how that works. That's not how that works.
I'm asking.
And let me tell you, what, you're going to guarantee that there's going to be a game one, then somehow there won't be a game one.
Well,
the Celtics come
back, it'll be in Boston. There you go.
Shorter
trip.
Stop. Ay, ay, ay. I'm so mad at you. By the way, congratulations to Denver. Nikola Jokic is sensational. He's phenomenal. I'm glad today people finally start to give this guy the credit he deserves, because it's weird. Guys won two MVPs, and people try to take away from him. You have, like, dopey Mark Jackson. I didn't put him in his top five for the MVP. The ridiculousness of Kendrick Perkins, who I like, and what he said about that MVP award. And now everyone's silent because Nikola Jokic made a great three-point shot last night. Another triple-double. He's a triple-double machine. And then you look at Jamal Murray. I've really been saying this since August of 2020. That's when I bought into what Denver was doing, and a big part of that was Jamal Murray having this killer instinct and being a closer. And in a league now of dynamic duos with really no super team existing, you look at the last four NBA finals, and the one that's going to be upcoming will be Denver and Miami. All four of these have been really fun storylines. Like, you look at the winner, Los Angeles in 2020, a lot of people didn't think LeBron and AD were going to be able to be healthy. In 2021, I thought that was a very fun team with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. I think there's a lot of similarities between the Nuggets this year with the Bucks of 2021. And last year, I don't even think Golden State even played their best brand of basketball, and they still found a way. And now we'll see if Denver could get the job done, four wins away. I think they're winning the NBA Finals. It's no disrespect to Miami. I know it's tough to bet against Jimmy Butler, but that series is over. Miami up against the Boston Celtics. But until someone takes down Denver, I said this going into the postseason, I'll say it now, I will pick Denver to win the title. And I just felt that way because Murray's back. He's playing at a dominant level. And then you look at Nikola Jokic. There's not a better player on the planet right now that's actively playing than the Joker, Nikola Jokic. All right, that's the Denver side of it. Now, let's get into LeBron. So after the game, LeBron James talks about how he has a lot to contemplate in regards to his future. And this is the first time we've really heard LeBron mention or even think about retirement, because for so many years, he's been putting out this idea and this dream that he's going to play with his son Bronny whenever Bronny gets into the NBA. Bronny's off to USC this upcoming year, and then he'll be draft eligible in 2024. So that's been the dream for LeBron James, and really the retirement conversation has not been there. But when he concludes year 20 at the age of 38, he is starting really to become an attention-seeking whore. Like, that's what last night was, if we're being fully transparent. This is, let's forget about the sweep. It's definitely believable because of the fact that he's 38. Naturally, you start to think about retirement around this time when you're an athlete, especially when you've been the standard of the sport for the last 20 years. And now every Tom, Dick, and Harry today is going to be talking about LeBron James, even though he played well last night, didn't like the last two possessions. But people are going to be talking more so, is LeBron going to be retiring rather than his team losing in four games to the Denver Nuggets and getting swept out of the NBA playoffs? I don't believe for a single second LeBron James is retiring. I know afterwards, Dave McMenamin, Dave said, when you say you got to think about stuff, what thread should we be pulling on? And he said, if I want to continue to play. McMenamin said, as in next year. LeBron says, yes. And then McMenamin said, would you walk away? He goes, I got to think about that. I don't think he's retiring. This is similar to Brady. This is similar to Rodgers. Whenever these guys throw out retirement, it then takes a few years for them to follow through on the retirement. You know LeBron is going to love the drama. Is going to love the day in and day out. Is LeBron going to be coming on back next year? Is he going to be playing in the NBA or one of the games? Great legends be walking away. And that's another thing. It doesn't pass the smell test. If LeBron is going to retire, he's going to want this big send-off. He's going to want the year show that basically like Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski received, or a Derek Jeter or Mariano Rivera, if you want to use baseball into that. This would not be LeBron with no fanfare. You just say, oh, I'm retiring over the summer, and he's still playing at a really damn good level. Even said it himself, he's still better than 90-95% of the players in the league. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't able to dominate even in a 40-point performance like the way that we're used to, because the injuries have been piling up the last 3-4 years. So maybe there is a part of it where the body breaking down on him, it's starting to creep into his mind. Maybe we are closer to the finish line than you once thought. But coming up for this upcoming basketball season in 2023, when you roll around to the fall and get towards the winter and the season's about to get underway, LeBron James will be back, and LeBron James will also be a Los Angeles Laker. Hickey, there's no doubt about that in my mind. Where do you lean on this one? LeBron James retiring, LeBron James coming on back with the Lakers, or maybe playing somewhere else next year?
I think he's going to seriously consider more than you're, I guess, giving credit. I don't know if credit's the right word, but I think he will actually seriously consider for a little bit. I do think, though, he will be back next year. I don't think, though, he will be back with the Lakers. I think part of him talking about he's got a lot to think about was retirement, but also his future, in the sense that if he's chasing championships, and he said yesterday, make it to the Western Conference Finals is not a successful season. Anything short of a ring for him is a failure. I think he's also looking at the fact that he just literally laid it all on the line. Sure, they got to the Western Conference Finals, but even in the game when he dropped 40 points, was not good enough to win the game and prevent a sweep to the hands of the Nuggets, and that's a team that's not going anywhere anytime soon. I think LeBron's also kind of looking at the landscape of,
so where's he going?
Can he win in LA? I think the answer is no. My guess would be Dallas.
Okay.
He's talked about his affinity with Luka Doncic.
Sure.
Mark Cuban is a guy that wants to make big-time moves. I think you'd absolutely be okay with bringing in, at that point, a 39-year-old LeBron James to Dallas for what would be a year, maybe two, with Luka. That'd be my guess right now, or my, I guess, prediction. LeBron to the Mavs.
In theory, makes sense. If he's going to go anywhere, it's either going to be with Luka Doncic or Steph Curry, the two players that he talks about the most, how much he would love to play with them. The only problem is, how do you find a way to get a deal done? The Mavericks have Luka Doncic. That's it. You're not trading Luka, clearly, for LeBron. What are you giving the Lakers with 1 year left in that LeBron James contract to get LeBron to Dallas? And also, you're going to have to match salaries, too.
Well, you have the number 10 overall pick in this year's draft the Mavericks do have, you can include.
Eh.
You have Kyrie Irving, who's out there, and if you're the Mavericks, you don't want to lose him. So even if you don't plan on re-signing him, a sign-and-trade option is definitely available.
Wait, hold on. You expect Kyrie Irving to cooperate when he wants to play with LeBron to then help you facilitate a trade where he wouldn't be playing with LeBron?
Well, I think Kyrie wants money more than anything else. And the Mavericks can offer him big-time money. He signs it, trades to the Lakers. If you're the Lakers, you're getting now a younger player compared to LeBron James. You pair Kyrie up with AD.
Is that going to work?
I don't think so, but plenty of people have continued to give Kyrie Irving the benefit of the doubt. There's already rumors about Kyrie and the Lakers anyway, so it's not like it's out of nowhere.
With LeBron, though.
But why can't he play with AD?
I don't know if he wants to.
And if LeBron's there, take less salary if you're Kyrie because you can't make that salary work. So if Kyrie's truly a max or is saying, I want the most money possible, well, then LeBron's not going to have to be there.
The only way I see Kyrie Irving being a Laker is if LeBron James is there. And that's actually why I also think another part of this, why LeBron's doing this, because I do believe there's going to be some pushback from the Lakers brass at first about bringing Kyrie, and LeBron's going to use this as leverage to find a way to facilitate that deal to get Kyrie to Los Angeles. I don't think for a second right now, especially if he still wants to play basketball with his son a year away from hitting free agency, that LeBron's going to walk away. I don't think he's walking away from Los Angeles. I think he's going to finish out this deal, and then they'll go from there and they'll take it year by year. But I really do believe this move by LeBron, it's not him really contemplating retirement. It's like a large fella, when they're trying to contemplate going to the gym, it usually doesn't happen right when you make the New Year's resolution. That's how seriously he's going to contemplate retirement. He's going to go back to his old habits. He's going to go back to his old ways, staying in Los Angeles, and he's going to use this as leverage to kind of dangle that carrot in front of Rob Pelinka. Oh, I'm going to retire. I'm not going to retire, all that stuff. So then Rob says, okay, all it's going to take is to get Kyrie Irving. You're going to come back, and he's going to say yes. And then it'll be Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and LeBron next year in L.A. for one more chance for LeBron to win a championship. And I don't like Kyrie. I don't trust Kyrie. But if you're telling me, Hickey, that Kyrie is going to go there and LeBron's not going to be there, that's something that I just can't even envision for a single second. It is the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's take a timeout. When we come on back, will the Celtics show any heart tonight? And what's the future of the Celtics going to look like as their series is coming to a close up against the Miami Heat?
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Poll question today. Will LeBron James be playing basketball next year? Yes, year 21 is coming, or no, he will retire. 86.7% believe that year 21 is coming in the NBA. 13.3% believe that he will retire. I think LeBron is returning and playing for the Lakers next year. Hickey thinks he's going to go somewhere like Dallas and force his way out. I don't really think there's much of a chance that he's going to retire. Hickey does think there is some chance. Let me ask it to you this way, though, Hickey. If you had to rank them 1, 2, and 3, most likely to least likely, LeBron playing for the Lakers next year, LeBron playing somewhere else, or LeBron retiring, how would you rank those? Because for me, it's 1, LeBron playing in Los Angeles, 2, LeBron playing somewhere else, and 3, LeBron James retiring, most likely to least likely.
I would say LeBron elsewhere, 1, LeBron with the Lakers, 2, LeBron retiring, 3.
Okay, so I guess then we're, even though it's semantics a little bit, you think there's a chance he's going to retire. I think there's no chance. It's still, the retirement is least likely on your list.
Well, I think he's like taking it seriously. I don't think that's just a flippant comment he just threw out there just to, you know, get attention. I do think he's, like, I think he's truly exhausted.
You don't
think he's going
that's a comment to try to distract everybody from the sweep? And also maybe use that as leverage to improve his situation currently? You actually really do believe that there's a legit, like out of 100%, how much of a chance do you think that he is that he's going to retire before I move further?
15-20%. Like, it's still small, but like, I don't think he's saying that. Like, I don't think he's using it as a way to talk about him and his future compared to not talking about the sweep. Like, it's not really an embarrassing sweep. It's not like they played well. The Nuggets were just a better team.
Oh, you Brian Windhorst now?
So,
but
no,
it's the best sweep you've ever seen?
It's not embarrassing for the Lakers, I don't think. So it's not like he has to...
Well, he showed up in game four.
So he has to distract... I don't think he needs to distract from this big conversation of, oh my God, LeBron's legacy is tarnished because he was swept by the Nuggets Western Conference Finals. Like you said, he dropped 40 points yesterday. He played solid for the entire series.
In the first half, he was great.
And it's not like it's... The Lakers embarrassed themselves, were blown out. Like they played well. It's just the Nuggets are a better team. Nothing wrong with that.
I think this is as close as the percentage chance that he's going to retire, just like Aaron Rodgers was contemplating retirement, and he was at 90% before he entered that dark cave and that darkness retreat and all that craziness as well. I never thought there was a chance he was going to actually retire, Rodgers. I never think there's going to be a chance that LeBron's going to retire, at least for this upcoming season. All righty, the Celtics tonight, an abysmal effort in Game 3, if you even want to call it that. It's actually embarrassing to even say there was any effort by the Boston Celtics. This team is shot. This team has no chance of even putting up a fight. I would be stunned if this series goes back to Boston for a Game 5. I'm incredulous that Jason Tatum has not made a single field goal in three games here. That's inconceivable to me how he did go from 51 points cooking up the Sixers in Game 7, being one of the hottest shooters on the planet, and now all of a sudden he can't do anything in the fourth quarter. But that team quit in Game 3. You thought they would actually show some heart because they're the kings of backing themselves up into a corner and then finding a way to get on out of it, as you just saw the round prior. But Tatum stinks in this series. Jaylen Brown stinks in this series. Joe Mazzulla is in over his head. And after Game 3, he's talking about how there's a disconnect with him and the players. You have Woj today talking about the team never got off the Ime Udoka dismissal. And we still really don't know the full truth of what happened. You could speculate who he sleep with in the organization, whose wife, whose girlfriend, all that stuff. We've been through that game before. But Mazzulla just does not have the respect of this locker room. He's not ready for the moment. Maybe he'll be a good coach one day, but the time is not right now for Joe Mazzulla. And these players, they don't have a killer instinct. They don't want it. They have been laughable this postseason outside of a good Game 7 by Jason Tatum. The first round should have never gone on as long as it did up against the Atlanta Hawks. The second round, the fact that Philadelphia, with the way their team's constructed, at a 3-2 lead is embarrassing if you're a Celtics fan. And now you're getting what you deserve, a team that just wants it more in Miami. And I think a fascinating question is, what's the future of the Celtics? Like, Tatum's not going anywhere. Jaylen Brown, he can make a whole lot more money by staying in Boston because of the second All-NBA team and how it incentivized a player to stay in their current situation. But I don't know if Jaylen Brown wants to stay. And that's the number one thing for Brad Stevens this offseason. You have to figure out, with 1 year left on that contract, if Jaylen Brown wants to stay. Because if he does, you want to bring him back. Because outside of bringing in Dame Lillard, there's nothing out there that I've heard that I'm like, okay, that could maybe make the Celtics better. And I know they just gave a deal to Mazzulla and they ripped off the interim tag. He probably will be back next year just because of the way the financials work, but he should not be back as the head coach of this team. There need to be changes. You could question, I think it's fair to bring up, maybe Brad Stevens, when you had the Udoka firing, I know it was a unique circumstance. Maybe he should have just went on in and been the head coach of this team, because at least he's been able to get that team to a bunch of conference finals, even though it may have been a little bit of an ugly ending. But this team has an identity problem right now, and this team does not have a killer instinct, and it's up to Brad Stevens this offseason to find that killer instinct and also figure out what the heck they're going to do with Jaylen Brown. But I expect nothing, absolutely nothing tonight from the Boston Celtics, because they show me what they're made out of this year with that horrific and just embarrassing Game 3 performance. And I hope Boston gets put out of their misery tonight and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo are celebrating at home. The College Football Fix is back. We'll do that on the other side as we welcome in the head coach of the TCU Horned Frogs in Sunny Dykes.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, God! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, the debut of the college football fix as we are counting down the days to the start of the 2023 season. We're 102 days away from TCU kicking off their season up against Deion Sanders in Colorado. Last year, we all remember what the Horned Frogs did They made it all the way to the national championship game. So let's check in with TCU, and their head football coach is entering his second season with the program. And that, of course, is Sonny Dykes. Coach, appreciate the time as always. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. Always great to have you on the show. Last year was a remarkable season in year one for you at TCU. How do you look back when you think back to all those great memories of getting to the national championship game?
You know what it was? It was a lot of fun. It was one of those years where, you know, truthfully, we had no expectations. You know, I believe we were picked 7th or 8th in the preseason with, you know, Big 12 media and coaches, that type of stuff. And, you know, we only had 5 or 6 players on our roster that had ever played in a bowl game. And so, you know, it was one of those years that we got off to a decent start and the team kept getting better and better. And, you know, all of a sudden you kind of, you know, you win some games early and you think, well, how can we play when we have some adversity? And we answered some of those questions. And then it became, you know, can we win on the road? And then it was, can we win when we have some guys banged up? And, you know, the team just found ways to win games and was really proud of them. And it made it a lot of fun. As I said, just when you don't know what kind of team you're going to have and you look up and all of a sudden you're 12-0 and playing for a Big 12 championship, and then you end up with the college football playoff and win the semifinal game. And it was just a lot of fun, a lot of things that went our way. But it really boiled down to a group of players that, you know, just decided they were going to do everything they could do to become great. And we had tremendous leadership and a bunch of good players, and it was a lot of fun to be a part of.
I always appreciate your honesty, because I remember when you joined us last year when you guys were 5-0, and you've been around the block a long time, and you said, hey, this isn't my first rodeo. You never know what to expect in a year one, and you were a bit surprised that the team was off to that 5-0 start, and you just said that basically once again. When was it in the season? Was there a certain moment when you said, okay, we're a whole lot better than what you guys thought you could be?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think for us, you know, as you said, we got off to a good start, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're playing Oklahoma State, and we find ourselves down 17 points in the second half of the game, and you kind of go, okay, you know, we're going to find out what we're made of now. And the guys came back, and we rallied and won that game in overtime. And so I think at that point, you started to say, you know, there's some maturity with this group. They're tough-minded guys. You know, then we won a couple of tough road games, you know, going to Kansas and playing up there. You know, it was college game day and they were undefeated and having a lot of success. And they're a team that, you know, is very well coached and plays hard. That was a tough place to win, going to West Virginia and winning, you know, going to Texas and winning. I think everybody kind of had that game circled and said that's when, you know, we're going to get that reality check. And our players played outstanding. And, you know, it was such a strange game. It was a game that I think everybody going in thought was going to be a high-scoring game, and it was a game that was 3-0 us at halftime. And so that was – we had to win a little bit differently in that game maybe than we thought we were going to. And then, you know, kind of the rally against Baylor and the walk-off field goal I think was pretty special. And at that point you kind of started to say, well, maybe this is a team of destiny and maybe we can keep this going.
How did you build that trust, Sonny Dykes, going in there first year as a head coach at TCU – where it seemed like you guys were clicking on all cylinders, your staff and the players?
Well, I think the biggest thing, it's what you said. It is truly about building trust and, you know, just making sure that you have a plan. I think our coaches did a really good job of coming in, and we had a plan. I mean, look, you know, our strength and conditioning coach, Kaz Kazadi, is one of the best in the business. We'd worked together 4 years at SMU. You know, we came in and we said, okay, look, here's exactly what we need to do, we think, to give ourselves a chance to be successful. And it's going to start, you know, with strength and conditioning, because that's the first thing we're going to do. And it's also going to start with nutrition and recovery and rest and making sure that we're doing things off the field to allow us to continue to get better and better when we get on the field and have a chance to practice. And then coaches did a great job, I think, of teaching scheme and through the spring. And you know, we were able to find a couple of really important players in the transfer portal, I think, that answered some depth issues that we had. And all of a sudden we got into fall camp, and I remember 2 or 3 weeks into camp thinking, you know what, this is a pretty good football team, and it's going to have a chance to be competitive in all these games, and let's see how it goes.
And your quarterback was marvelous last year. Max Duggan made it all to the way to New York as a Heisman finalist. And he wasn't even your starter before the season did commence. How did you look back on coaching Max Duggan?
Well, Max was like a lot of guys on our team. I mean, he was a great leader, incredibly competitive, tough guy. Max had what you want quarterbacks to have, and that's the ability to make everybody around them better. You know, he just brought out the best in people. You know, just had tremendous leadership and was unselfish. And that was what was fun about the team last year, is that nobody cared about personal accolades. You know, we had 8 players drafted. I never heard anybody talk about the draft. We had a Jim Thorpe Award winner, a Davey O'Brien Award winner, a Johnny Unitas Award winner. Darius Davis won the Kick Returner of the Year Award. I mean, just all these different awards that these guys won individually. They never talked about it. I mean, that didn't mean anything to them. It was all about the team, and that made it fun to be around this group. And you know, I think people ask me, well, did you have success because you had 8 players drafted? I think 8 players got drafted because we had success, and I think we had success because 8 players got drafted. And I think all of it worked well together. I mean, our guys, they were incredibly unselfish, and they believed in each other. They cared about each other. And the most important objective every single week for everybody in our program was to win the game. And that made it a lot of fun to be a part of.
When you're on the road recruiting, and we know TCU has been a good football program for a while, but after the year you guys just had, what are kids now saying when you walk into a high school about the TCU football program?
Well, I think, look, the reason I took this job, the reason I came over from SMU is I felt like TCU was a program that could play for championships. And, you know, when I talked to our coaching staff and I said, here's why we're going to do this, that's what we talked about. The very first time we met with the players, that's what we talked about. Look, this is a team that, you know, this is the kind of place where we think we can play for championships. And we played for a Big 12 championship and a national championship. Both this year, and we lost both of them. We've got to figure out a way to win those. But that's the kind of place this is. And now when you sit down with the recruits and you talk to them, you say, hey, look, we can win a national championship here. It's not that far-fetched. It's not that big of a dream. You know, it's more of something that they just saw play out in front of them. You know, certainly we didn't play our best against Georgia. Ran into a very, very good football team, and you know, they did a better job getting their team ready to play than we did. But at the same time, I mean, we were there. And those recruits can see that. Their families can see that. The high school coaches in Texas and across the country can see that. And now those are the expectations for our program, is to, you know, to consistently be a championship-level program.
Well, that's what annoyed me, Sonny Dykes, after the national championship game. Some said, TCU showed they didn't belong in the college football playoff. And I'm like, hold on, wait a second. Did we forget that they just beat Michigan a few weeks prior? I never got that convo. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people say all kinds of things. And so, you know, you have to just worry about yourself, and not everybody's got opinions. And most of the time they're not particularly good. And so it is what it is. And you just go, look, if I had turned that game on as a casual fan, you know, I would sit there and say, well, there's a huge difference between these two teams. And there certainly was that day. You know, the day that we played, Georgia played a lot better than we did, and Georgia had a better football team, and Georgia's coaching staff did a better job than we did getting them ready to play. And all those things, you know, played out. You know, if you go back and you look at our game against Michigan, you know, you're going to look at our team and go, man, that's a really good football team. You know, that beat another really good football team. And so, you know, you just have to do the best you can. You don't worry about what people say, you know, because like I said, you know how it is. They say a lot of things.
I always wonder when a team has success, especially success that people didn't see coming, like your program had a year ago, how they respond the next season. I know there's so much changeover and turnover with the roster from year to year, especially now with the transfer portal and NIL and all that. But how do you try as a coach not to have your kids get complacent and be even hungrier now this upcoming season?
Well, I think the big thing that we try to do all the time is make sure the guys understand, look, just because some of you had success last year doesn't mean it's going to happen this year. You know, it's a different team. It's a different chemistry. It's a different leadership. You know, it's key people that have moved on and that aren't here anymore. And now it's an opportunity for everybody else to show what they can do. And our guys understand that. I mean, you know, what happened last year has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on what's going to happen this year. I mean, none. You know, the good thing is I do think our players do bring some confidence with us, but they also know that, you know, what they're capable of, and they also remember what happened against Georgia and how bad that game was. And so we're a work in progress. We're certainly not a finished product. We're going to be a team that, you know, has talent. The key for us is going to be how do we perform in those games that are going to be tight games. You know, there's going to be probably 5, 6, 7 games that we play this year that could end up being one score games, and how well we handle those opportunities and how well we handle those challenges will really determine what kind of season we had. And we handled them very well last year for the most part. And we got to handle them that way this year.
How do you describe what type of quarterback coach Sonny Dykes, Chandler Morris can be for you guys?
Well, he's a lot different than Max. I think this, what we're doing offensively is really truly kind of made for his skill set. He's a guy that, has a very quick release, gets rid of the ball very fast, is a really good decision maker, has a bigger arm than you think he does, kind of sneaky big arm, really anticipates throws well, throws the ball to spots, you know, is good in the pocket, just all the stuff that good quarterbacks do, he does. He just doesn't have a ton of in-game experience. You know, I think that's the only thing that you worry about is, you know, how's he going to perform in games? Because, you know, he played against Colorado the first half of the game last year, started that game as a starting quarterback, got injured in the third quarter. So we didn't get to see him a whole lot last year. Saw him a little bit the year before I got here, you know, performed very well against Baylor and had some good games. And so, you know, it's different when you're the starter than it is when you're coming off the bench. So he's got some challenges in front of him, but he's very talented. He's very, very smart. As I said earlier, he's got a lot of the important attributes that great quarterbacks have. So we think he's got a chance to be certainly one of the better quarterbacks in the Big 12 and maybe one of the better ones in the country.
First game up against Deion Sanders. I know there's going to be a lot of hype around that one, especially with Deion's trying to build at Colorado. How do you kind of view, I know you're 102 days away, going up against and coaching up against Deion Sanders?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I think none of us are going to know exactly who's playing and what the depth chart's going to look like. I'm sure they'll try to keep that as quiet as they possibly can as they get through fall camp and all that. I mean, typically what happens when you play a team and they've got an important player or two from a different school, you go back and you watch that tape and you see what those kids are capable of and what their skills are and all that type of thing. And they're going to have so many new starters. I mean, you're going to have to go back and watch probably, you know, 30 different schools where these kids have come from that are going to, you know, be significant contributors. So it's going to be a little bit of going into that game a little blind, probably just from a personnel standpoint. Now we'll be able to have a good idea, I think, on what they're going to do scheme wise and all that. And so it'll be fun. I mean, it's going to be a big challenge for us. I'm sure, you know, that team will be very excited. It's a new era in Colorado football, and I'm sure those guys are going to roll in here with a ton of confidence, and they're going to have a lot of good players, and it'll be a big challenge for us.
You mentioned it earlier, Coach Sonny Dykes from the TCU Horned Frogs getting ready for year number two of his program at TCU. You had 8 players drafted, 3 actually by the Chargers, one of them being Quinton Johnston in the first round. What type of wide receiver are the Chargers and Justin Herbert getting?
Well, they're getting a big play guy. I mean, I think that's the great thing about Quinton is Quinton's one of those really special wide receivers that can turn a 5 or 6 yard slant into a 60 or 70 yard touchdown. And, you know, he runs good routes, but Quinton's really, the magic happens when he gets his hand on the ball and people have to tackle him because he's a big, strong guy and he can run through tackles. And he's got a really impressive way of accelerating for a big guy. You know, he can get going fast really quickly and eats up the cushion on people and takes angles away from guys that are trying to tackle him. And so he's going to be a fun guy to watch. I mean, he's got tremendous upside. Like I said earlier, great size, great strength, great explosive athlete. Best thing about Quinton is he loves the game of football and he's a hard worker. He's going to be the first guy on the field every day and the last guy off of it. And I think at the end of the day, he has an opportunity to develop into a really special player.
Last thing I'll ask you, I know earlier you mentioned how you lost to the Big 12 championship game and then also the national championship game. Coach, I only had one problem with your program last year, and I'm a Heisman voter. I had Max on as a finalist, but when you're down at the one-yard line, why didn't Max get the ball in that overtime?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think part of it was Max was so worn out and beat up.
A warrior.
That we I think looking back, we probably wish he would have. You know, because he would have probably more than likely found a way to get us in the end zone, and he always did. But I think that was probably the thinking was, look, this guy's pretty beat up and pretty worn out, and let's give it to somebody who's a little bit more fresh.
Well, heck of a season last year. We look forward to what's going to be in store this year for the TCU Horned Frogs. I really appreciate you doing this, Coach Sonny Dyke.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, and always good to talk to you guys.